It's time to know your lane.
There was a side of corn, so I just dumped the corn into the mac and cheese, mixed it up, and I ate the whole damn thing.
That's illegal. You can't do that, man. You can't mix and match mac and cheese with corn.
I have an idea.
Thank you.
Shut up and drive.
This is Overdrive with Hayes, Noodles, and the O-Dog on TSN 1050.
Final hour, Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 on the TSN Go app, and now on TSN 2. Brian Hayes, Jamie Noodles, McLennan, the O-Dog will be back in a moment. He'll be dragging Bob McKenzie along for the ride. Bob will be in studio around 6:20. Jack Armstrong will join us here in a moment. And Jack will be talking about what Masai Ujiri had to say today and where the Raptors are going to go from here. But he lives down in Buffalo. I think he's got season tickets to the Bills and the Sabres.
Got them both.
I believe so. And I would think that would be probably the cheapest double shot in North American sports, wouldn't you think? Like, yeah, Bills, Sabres?
Yeah, I think so, for sure. For the big sports in a big city.
Like,
for
compared
sure.
to Toronto, New York, Chicago, LA, Miami, Boston. I mean, that it would just it wouldn't even be on the same level.
That's true.
But anyway, the reason I bring that up is because the Bills have hired their new GM, Brandon Bean, who was the former assistant GM down in Carolina. Okay. So Brandon Bean finds himself in the same position that Masai Ujiri currently finds himself in, because now he shares a division with Tom Brady, the GOAT, and Belichick, the GOAT.
Yeah,
and Masai Ujiri happens to share a conference with LeBron James, the GOAT. So
not good.
What do you do? I mean, if you're the GM of the Bills, what do you really think you're going to do to try to get past the Patriots over the next year or two? And what are you going to do in Toronto to try to somehow get past Cleveland?
What you're doing is praying for an injury, unfortunately.
Here's the problem with that, though. Let's say LeBron gets injured. You're not definitely beating Boston.
No.
Not definitely beating Washington. And guess who you are definitely not beating?
Golden State.
Golden State.
Right.
So it's not only Cleveland. We keep focusing on LeBron and how you're going to beat Cleveland. Let's say somehow the Raptors put together a team, and everything just opens up for them.
Yep.
The path to the NBA Finals is available to them. Guess what's going to happen once they get there and they play Durant, Curry, Clay, Draymond?
It's not good.
They're going to get smoked.
Yeah, that's a problem.
It's a big problem.
But you got to go at it. I mean, you don't just give up. Like, you've got to find a way.
I understand that. And you're a proponent of continuing down the path they've been down. And listen, 51 wins, second round, that's nothing to sneeze at.
I believe in this for a couple different reasons. Think about it. The fan base is a very loyal fan base here.
Mm-hmm.
They're winning 50 games a year. You've made it to the playoffs. Like, the organization's making money. The fan, like, by all accounts, the fans are pretty happy with where they're at. Like, they've had some success the last couple years. You're taking a risk that you're not going to have success. So the fan base could be pissed off if you end up blowing it up. Yeah, you can have a little different, a tweak here or there. Well, you have to have a tweak here or there just based on contract status. So I think you continue to reload and try and retool while you have some of these players and add to it. That he did that at the deadline. Came up short.
I think that's what he's more than likely going to do. Before we bring Jack on, let's play this one clip that really stood out to me.
Okay.
It says a lot about how he feels about the player personnel on this team. Okay. To your point, they're not going to bring back everyone. That's not going to happen.
No.
But also maybe what Masai is thinking about when it comes to the security of Dwayne Casey.
I don't think this is a matter of changing players or anything like that, you know. But how do we change a little bit of how we play and how we approach the game?
Let's bring in Jack Armstrong, our Raptors analyst. So if it's not about changing the players, but it's about changing the way they play, what does that say about the security of Dwayne Casey?
What it says is that, you know, they have a contractual agreement with him for another few years, and I think they like him. I think they want to see, you know, just like you have a player and you want to see growth and improvement, I think it's the same thing in this situation. I don't think he's done anything that's, you know, deems a fireable offense. You know, obviously, you know, you get swept by the Cavs, But the reality is, I think you look at the Raptors right now, you look at the Cavs right now, in spite of the fact they added Serge Ibaka and P.J. Tucker, Cavs are much better. They were outclassed. I don't care if Phil Jackson's coaching it. I don't care if Red Auerbach's coaching it. I think you are outclassed in terms of just they got better. They got three potential Hall of Famers on their team, and they got great shooters. And I'm not sure if you have a Hall of Famer on your team. DeMar DeRozan might be the closest thing to that. And we'll see how the next 5 to 6 years work out for him in terms of his ability to create a Hall of Fame resume. So I think that can the coaching improve? Absolutely. Does it have to improve? Yes. But I think if you look at the body of work of Dwayne Casey comparative to the, you know, 23-year history of the franchise, and if you look at what's out there on the market, and here's the other thing he doesn't say, and that's, you know, what's out there on the market that is better than what you have? You know, like who? Name me three guys that are available right now as coaches that are better than what Dwayne Casey can do. And I can only think of one guy out there right now that, in my opinion, has an outstanding body of work that would even be in the same discussion, and that would be Jeff Van Gundy. And he's working, you know, TV for ABC and ESPN. And, you know, obviously you got a guy like Jerry Stackhouse, who's a hot name right now, who's in your organization and won a D-League championship with the 905. But, you know, he's got 2 years of coaching experience under his belt, 1 year as a head coach. So I think you kind of – the guy's done an outstanding job for you. Is it a perfect job? No. But there are 22 other teams just the other day that were home watching, and there were only eight still alive, and he coached one of them. So I think you got to look and say, this guy's pretty good. And, you know, there's got to be some improvements in how he does it, and there's got to be improvements in how they do it. Just like you bring a player in and say, hey, I need to see these three things next year, or this isn't going to work. And I'm sure they brought Dwayne in and said, we need to see X, Y, and Z a lot better, or we're going to have to do something. So I think it's normal, healthy stuff with a well-run organization where you don't push the panic button and you don't fire a coach after a 51-win season, back-to-back 50-win seasons, and you got your tail kicked by Cleveland. But guess what? You know, after experiencing that series, they're pretty damn good.
Oh, they're exceptional. And the same thing will apply, I would think, next year. And that's the problem here for me, Jack, is how do you sell to a fan base? Let's say you bring back Casey, you re-sign Lowry, maybe you re-sign Ibaka. How do you sell to your fan base going into next season that it's going to be any different than what it was the past 2 years?
Well, here's the thing. I'm really tired of the whole sell to the fan base thing.
But it's a business, Jack.
I understand. And not there's 29 teams that don't end up winning. Just like the Stanley Cup, just like the Super Bowl, just like the World Series, not everyone gets the ring. And the fact that you don't get the ring doesn't make you a failure. Jamie, you played on really good teams.
Yeah.
You played on really bad teams and everywhere in between. And I think sometimes we categorize people as complete failures when they don't win the cup, or when they don't win the Larry O'Brien Trophy or the Super Bowl, which I think is complete nonsense. I think you still got to try your best based upon your market, your resources, what you have in place to do the best that you can. And I think if you show your fan base that you're doing everything possible to do just that, they have a decision that they can make to either come or not come. Just like all those people for years and years and years when there was zero direction of the Toronto Maple Leafs, yet they sold every ticket and made that decision. And I don't think MLSE is sitting on their hands one bit on the basketball side and saying that because it's a totally different dynamic than hockey. I think they want people there. I think they're appreciative of what they have. I think the ownership's been supportive. I think it's a really well-run basketball operation. I think it's been a very well-coached basketball operation. Is the whole thing perfect? Far from it. But I think that selling it to your fans, I just have a hard time getting my head around that. I think you do the best you can. Whether they keep Kyle Lowry or not isn't just dependent on them. It's dependent on what other teams decide in the free market to offer him and what potential you can offer him based upon your entire 15-man roster and your luxury tax considerations.
Well, I think this is a league-wide issue, and I think this is exclusive to the NBA, where coming into the season, there were two teams that were going to win a title, and that's exactly what's going to happen here. It's going to be Cleveland versus Golden State for the third year in a row. So this is not only a Raptors issue. And the fact is, the Raptors are a very good team. 51 wins, second round. To your point, 10 years ago when they were doing nothing and winning 27 games, would I have taken that? Of course, every fan would in a heartbeat. But I think this is the most difficult decision for any executive to make in pro sports. Do you continue to be a very good team? Because if you're a very good team, you're going to win a lot of games. You're going to sell a lot of tickets. You're going to win playoff games, and you're probably going to get to the second or third round. There's a lot of owners in this league that would take that in a heartbeat because you're going to make money. There's a lot of executives in this league that would take that in a heartbeat because you're going to be safe. You can sell to your owners, hey, we're making money. We're doing things. We're selling jerseys. We got people in the seats. There's no doubt about that. But Masai said today he wants to build a championship team. That's the only thing that matters. This team is not capable of winning a title. Now, it's not necessarily because of what they're doing. It's just the reality of having a league with LeBron James and a league with Golden State.
No, you're totally right.
So,
You're right.
And this is the problem. This is what I'm talking about, Jack. When I'm saying sell to the fans, I understand what you're saying. You're going out there, and the sales pitch would probably be 51 wins, a couple of All-Stars, a fun team that goes to the playoffs. Right. But it's just going to – I think it'll be the same script. I think that's what's going to happen is if they bring back Kyle and Ibaka, they'll win 50-plus games, run into Cleveland and lose. That's tough.
That might be the case. But you know what? That's the same case if I'm the GM of the Utah Jazz or the Houston Rockets or the San Antonio Spurs or the Memphis Grizzlies or any of those teams. And you're right about the whole dynamic of the NBA. And that's something that's sitting on Adam Silver's desk, not your desk, not my desk. But it's a reality that Maple Leaf Sports and Entertainment and Masai Ujiri and Jeff Waltman have to deal with and they got to come to grips with. But the bottom line is we can all talk about wanting to win a championship. At the same time, there's the other side of it of do you want to be competitive or are you better off in the mode of trying to get to a point where you tank it and, you know, get it together? I mean, I live in Buffalo. You know what? Edmonton tomorrow night's playing in Game 7 for a chance to get to the West Finals. And Buffalo tanked. And they did everything, and guess what? They got the second prize. Jack Eichel's quite a player. I think he's an outstanding player. But you know what? A lot of people lost their jobs. They're home. They're out on the golf course, and it hasn't worked out. And there's, you know, in this business, there's a high degree of risk for doing that. You look at Minnesota. Everyone talks about how great Andrew Wiggins is with the whole discussion of trade Lowry and this and that. And thank goodness James Dolan was an idiot and didn't trade for him with the Knicks. But the bottom line is Andrew Wiggins is a great player, and he's got Karl Anthony Towns, and they got Tom Thibodeau and all this. You know what? They haven't come close to sniffing the playoffs. So give me the Greek Freak and give me the young players of Milwaukee that actually get to the playoffs. And I'm not saying Andrew Wiggins can't be a great player, but the whole thing in Philadelphia, there's a risk involved in that. And in my opinion, a lot of times success in life is just hanging around and grinding and building around the edges. And you just never, never know. But I think that it's a big decision to go the other way, to tank and say we're all in it for a championship because you might not ever get back there. And guess what? Then you are unemployed.
Which is the biggest gamble. Exactly. And that was my point. I mean, deciding to deviate from the plan where you're very good to potentially take a step or two back to take two or three forward is a big gamble. But if it pays off, That's why they named streets after you with Jack Armstrong. See, I would use a different team in your city as an example here, and it's the Bills, because I think Brady and Belichick are the equivalent of LeBron. The Bills, they can't win as long as Brady's the man and Belichick continues to do his thing. And I would like to believe this new GM that they just hired is going to look at this and say, we got to think about where we are 2-3 years down the road when Brady's finally done. Like, when he's finally done, that's when we can probably win again. And I would suggest maybe the Raptors have to take that into consideration. But if it ends up getting to a point, Jack, next year, if they decide not to bring back Lowry, is there a formula in terms of player personnel that can be put together that would lead this team to still be a playoff team next year?
Yes, absolutely.
You think they still could be?
Comparing it to Buffalo, I'll just say this. Buffalo's dysfunction junction in terms of management and coaching decisions, Toronto Raptors aren't. So that's a dramatic difference.
Very true, but Brady and Belichick are, you can't beat them, right?
No, it's a similar situation, but the bottom line is, yes, if Kyle Lowry walked, there's no doubt that they still have the ability, because now it loosens their cap a little bit to a degree, that maybe you have to turn around and trade one of your other assets and reboot your team from a different look altogether. And I think that would be the big consideration. Maybe it's a Jonas Valanciunas would be the guy, based upon style of play, that you would move. Obviously, if you moved DeMar DeRozan, if Kyle Lowry left, that would be a dramatic reboot and a trying to go down a different path altogether. But I think it's fascinating. It's intriguing. It should be a fun few months. But nonetheless, I think you can't discount what they've done the last 4 years. And unfortunately, they're in the same position as the Hawks. And the Pacers have been the last few years, as well as teams in the past that couldn't get by Michael Jordan. But nonetheless, you got to bust your tail and you got to keep trying. You owe it to your fan base. As much as selling it to your fan base, you owe it to your fan base to do your very best to try to put your best on the floor. That's your job.
Great stuff as always, Jack. Enjoy yourself down there in Buffalo. Good luck with the Sabres. Good luck with the Bills. You're going to need it, buddy.
Hold on. I need another beer.
Do yourself a favor and get on that for sure. All right, man. We'll do it again soon.
All right, guys.
There's Jack Armstrong.
See, could you try and build a team like the Pistons that beat the Bulls? Like some ass kickers.
Yeah. It's a different game now, man. The game has softened up. The game.
But hockey's softened up, too. It's just, you talk about a different dynamic, maybe a different approach. If you're a team that's hard to play against, it was interesting for me the other day. I can't remember who our guest we had on, but he was talking about somebody coming off the bench for like 2 minutes, or they sign him right at the deadline.
Yeah, it was Windhorst was talking about, was it Dante Jones, I think, maybe, with the Cavs?
Yeah.
Just came in and caused problems.
Just comes in and caused havoc, gets kicked out. Like, it's almost like he's a tough guy. And it was just in the back. It stuck in the back of my mind. I was like, they've got an enforcer on their team, which is weird. But could you have easier said than done some badasses where they've got to be able to play, but it's a certain style that doesn't match up well against Cleveland?
I think you can have that potentially. I'm not sure it can work the way the rules work today. It's a 3-point shooting game. It's a ball movement game, but you need your stars.
Right.
To define that mentality. Like when you talk about the bad boy Pistons,
right?
Thomas and Lambeer and Rodman and Dumars, like they were in for the fight. They would get up and throw and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
I think a part of the problem here that was really accentuated over these four games was DeMar doesn't have that in him.
Right.
And I'm not sure Lowry does either. Like Lowry's got this reputation of being this bulldog and all that. He was talking up LeBron like the guy was a god. And then I didn't love the optics of, okay, you didn't play game three, but then you said, I'm not playing game four, like 2 days in advance.
Right.
I question whether or not those guys are capable of leading that type of team because of the way they approach Cleveland. They put them on a pedestal. And if you're going to be that tough bully team, you can't treat anyone equally. Yeah, you got to treat them like scum.
Yeah, you disrespect them in a way, but...
I don't think these guys are capable of doing that.
To me, he's seen some...
JV can play like that.
Has some grit.
He can, but I mean, he's too inconsistent with his production.
Right.
So you can't lean on him that much.
Yeah.
I hear you. And that might be, maybe they go back to the drawing board and say, can we put together a different formula here?
A formula, and you can't base your team just around matching up against one team, but ultimately that's what's happened, right? Is if you're going to design a team, like you said, even if you get lucky or you end up having lightning in a bottle and you beat LeBron, you've still got other teams waiting for you that are, you know, Golden State if you end up making it past that.
That's the thing. It's like climbing Everest twice.
Right.
You might be lucky to survive the first one, but two?
Yeah, the second one could be
a struggle. It's tough, man. All right, we'll get Bob in here. I don't know where the O-Dog is, but
he's busy.
He should be back at some point. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 and on TSN 2. Game in the NHL playoffs tonight. Ottawa at the Garden in New York looking to close out the Rangers. And this series, we haven't talked a lot about this series. We've been so preoccupied with the Pens and Caps and that Ducks-Oilers series. So I think this series, which has been very entertaining, deserves this kind of profile. Bob McKenzie in studio, the Hockey Insiders, brought to you by Finance. And where is this series kind of ranked for you in terms of entertainment value and where your focus is at?
I think it's been really good. It's been kind of weird because there were those games in New York where the Sens looked completely out of it. But I think a lot of the other games have been entertaining. And it's been fun watching Erik Karlsson do his thing. And, I mean, we just did our hit for SportsCenter. And if he's right on top of his game tonight, advantage Ottawa. If the Rangers can do in Game 6 to him what they did in Game 3 and Game 4, which is physically beat him up, shut him down, then right. We're going back to Ottawa for Game 7.
What do you think a number when it's all said and done for Karlsson? I mean, health providing. I mean, if he wins the Norris this year, which I think he's expected to do for number 3, like, what the hell kind of number? How many can he win?
It's a good question. The way he's going, he might win a lot.
Like 6, 7?
It's hard to know, but, you know.
What did Lidstrom win, 7?
So you're asking me what would be a contract for him?
Or, well, that's an interesting question, too.
Or were you just saying how many numbers might he win?
No, I'm talking Norris trophies. Like, how many Norris trophies can this guy win? How many did Lidstrom win?
Lidstrom won
like
7, I think. Yeah, he won 7. But he won 7 all, like, over 30, I think, wasn't it? Like, it was weird. Lidstrom didn't win a lot of Norris trophies early
in
his career.
Yeah, he was much later in his career when he won them,
right.
Absolutely.
And Karlsson's what, 26?
I'm just looking at
26.
It. Okay, so he's got 2 years left at 6'5".
That's such a bargain.
So he's 2 years left. So that means in another year they can do an extension. And so
that's just going to be a situation much like Carey Price is in, where it's like, what do you want to put on the paper in our organization and our success
and what
is
number,
going to be based on the number?
What number can you put on that paper that will make you happy but also give us the ability to give you some players so that we're playing playoff hockey and that we're not, you know, one of the worst teams in the league with a $10 million defenseman. Because
I would be crapping my pants if you find out, like, he, you know, some guys, like, they train in L.A. or something. Like, he has this love for anything. I don't know. I don't care what his love is for different climates or whatever. I don't want him to have love for anything.
That's why it's important. And I said this at the beginning of the year. When Pierre Dorion took over as the general manager, he immediately makes the Brassard for Zibanejad trade. And then at the deadline, you know, they added Burrows, gave him a 2-year contract. They added Stahlberg. You know, they didn't mortgage the future. They weren't giving up, you know, Thomas Chabot or Colin White or any of the really good young players. But, you know, in order to get Burrows, they gave up a real good prospect to the
Canucks.
You know, Jonathan Dolan, who the Canucks have signed, and it looks like he's going to be a keeper. You know, so they've, you know, why are they doing this? Well, I think it's pretty obvious. They want to make the playoffs. They want to go deep into the playoffs. And they want to make sure that a year from now, when you can extend Erik Karlsson, you're doing it on, you know, if they win this game tonight and they get to the conference final, and then next year they have another run where they can go, you know, at least three deep into the, and then you sit down to do a negotiation with Erik Karlsson, it's a lot more favorable to him saying, okay, yeah, well, you know, let's pick a number. Is it 8.5? Is it 9? Is it 9.5? Give us a little bit of a hometown discount so we can keep some good players, and we're going to get over the hump this time. We've been to the conference final the last couple of years. Now we're going to make it and build, continue to build around you. And he's like, yeah, okay, I like it in Ottawa. I'm playing playoff hockey. Right. I've played 5-6 playoff rounds over the last 2 years versus not making the playoffs or getting knocked out in the first round, because that's when your mind's going to wander if you're a guy like him and saying, I can make the 9-5 somewhere else and on a team that going to go deep in the playoffs. So that's what a lot of this is about. The Erik Karlsson window is open for a period of time here, and you want to take advantage of it if you're Ottawa. Those guys don't grow on trees.
No, they don't, and I'm not going to lose sleep over a guy who's going to make millions and millions and millions, but this is another example of how the hard cap can really screw over the high-end players, because it's not, I don't believe it's the player's job to say, here's more money for everyone else.
It's cannibalism.
Yeah.
And they know it. They know it. The bigger number they take, the crappier the team is going to be. And they, you know, and that's why Carey Price, when the season ended, it was encouraging to the Montreal Canadiens fans that he came out and said, you know what? I want to be in Montreal, and I'm sure we'll figure out a number that works for me and works for them. And the, you know, the implication there is, I understand the bigger number I take, the more I screw myself in terms of having a number one center or a better defense in front of me.
Right.
So I've got to, you know, within reason. And that's why people are going to look at the Taves and Kane number, 10-5, and say that's kind of the unofficial salary cap within the salary cap. And you got to take less than that, way less than that, if especially if you're a position player, i.e. a defenseman or a goaltender, to allow your team to be able to build the kind of competitive team it needs to allow you to not only get the money you want within reason, but a chance to win.
Bob, all the talk right now, and obviously we talked about it today and the quiz and everything, Sidney Crosby, concussion protocol, spotters, and where they weren't able to take him out of the game. Where do you lie in all this?
Well, I don't want, you know, it's everybody's so extreme. I mean, everybody's so shrill.
Everybody's a friggin' doctor too.
Yeah, well, like, that too. But does it make sense? Just in the very narrow picture of Sidney Crosby crashing headfirst into the boards, does it make sense that a concussion spotter could not remove him from the game because of the nature of that play? That doesn't make sense to me.
Right.
So if I'm the National Hockey League, I'm like, yeah, I understand we've got evidence that suggests a shoulder to the head or smashing your head on the ice or getting punched in the face in a fight are the primary things that lead to, you know, getting up slowly or clutching your head or and that may be symptomatic of a concussion. But I got to believe that crashing headlong into the boards, especially if the player happens to be the face of the game and just happened to have come off. And I realize you can't write rules that say if it's number 87 and he's just coming off his concussion, then you should pull him from the game. I understand that. So all I'm saying is, in a perfect world, that maybe the concussion spotter has a little more latitude for a mandatory removal, not from the game, mandatory removal from the game for assessment. Now, as it turned out, as fate would have it here, he was only out for a minute and change anyways after the incident. 93 seconds, went off the ice for a little bit, came on for the final 2 seconds to take the face off. So he literally was on the ice 95 seconds after he crashed into the boards. Then he was able to be assessed and everything else after that. I mean, he didn't have symptoms during the game. He didn't have symptoms after the game. He didn't wake up with symptoms this morning. He, you know, at some point I realize everybody's hyper-vigilant about protecting players and what have you, but in this particular instance, he doesn't have a concussion, and they made all the right calls, it would seem.
So that leads me to believe that maybe we should trust the people that are running the show.
I would agree that I don't think you can just have blind trust either, because we know there are too many instances where the players, you know, know the player mentality.
Yeah.
Have you got any symptoms? Nope. And meanwhile, the guy's eyes are spinning spinning the other way, and they're saying, no, I'm fine. We need to go to the quiet room. No, I'm not going to the quiet room. So you can't allow the players to make the decision. You can't allow a coach or ultimately maybe even a trainer to make that decision. You need somebody who's looking out for the best interest of the player, not the team or the league. But so, you know, blind trust. But for the most part, Noodles, I think you're right. I mean, you know, these, you know, everybody so suspicious of every doctor. And if right. the guy's called a team doctor right away, well, he's working for the team. He's not working for the player. And as I said, and I said this earlier when Crosby came back in, what, 5 days from his right. concussion, there's a lot of players in the National Hockey League I think would fudge whatever they're feeling right. to stay in a game. I could be wrong on this. I don't believe Sidney Crosby's one of them. I think he went through too much hell, and I think he knows better than anybody what the darkness of life is like when you're concussed, and he had his career flash before his eyes right. on more than one occasion. And the treatment he gets and the diagnosis he gets and the things they do for him are so cutting-edge state-of-art when it comes to the concussion stuff.
That's the only basis I made my assessment. People saw him flying into the boards, and they're like, what the hell's wrong with the league? I'm thinking, Sidney Crosby, of all people, he knows when he gets up what the deal is and if he should get off the ice. Anybody in the world knows that.
I agree, and I 100% agree, and I said it. But you still can't let the players be the final arbiter right. of who stays in the game, who comes
Fair
out of
enough.
The game, because
yeah.
so many players would just say, I'm fine, and they're not fine. I believe, and maybe I'm naive for believing this, but I believe Sidney Crosby knows this thing better than anybody and understands the symptoms and understands the danger of coming back. The reason he was out for as long as he was out, When Steckel and Crosby collided, and note how I said collided because I don't believe for a minute that Steckel meant to do it.
Right.
When that happened, the reason he was out for as long after that is because he came back and played a couple more games and then got hit by Hedman behind the bench, and then he was out for a really long time. And I've maintained for years, you show me a guy who misses more than a year of action in the National Hockey League with a concussion, and I'll show you a guy, more often than not, who was concussed and came back and played while he was concussed and get the second hit syndrome yeah. and makes it that much worse again.
Well, but I think that exactly is why people were on high alert. Because
Absolutely.
They sat there and said, wait a minute, he left in game 3, he came back in game 5, and then game 6, he goes violently into the
yep.
boards the way he was. What has kind of bothered me about the Twitter sphere, and I know this is an inexact science because Twitter represents 5% of society, but it feels like people want him to be concussed so that they can point fingers at the league, right?
Yeah.
So they can say,
yeah.
I knew the league didn't care about their players, which is, I think, a ridiculous take.
That would be pretty sad. But I think the go back to the original point, and the original point is I don't believe that the league concussion spotters should have such an entirely narrow definition that if Sidney Crosby goes headlong into the boards and gets up slowly, that you can't remove him for assessment because it doesn't meet the very specific criteria that he didn't take a shoulder to the head, he did not hit his head directly on the ice surface, or he did not get directly punched in the face. Because right now, those are the only, if he's slow to get up or clutching his head, those are the only three criteria under which he could be removed for observation by a league concussion spotter.
So, I mean, if you broaden it and use the word common, or the two words, common sense.
Yeah, but you're not allowed to put common sense in documents,
no, unfortunately. I understand that, but I understand, and
don't.
I also understand where people are coming from. It's just, I always err on the side of caution, to your point, of where Sidney Crosby has gone through this before. Dr. Collins, I believe, is one of the neuro guys that he's worked with and has a renowned reputation. Like, these guys' names are on it, too. You have to think that these doctors are right there as well.
But don't you think it's the fact that the league has mandated that these concussion spotters are a part of the program now? Like, I was talking about this earlier, Bob. I think there's a lot of hockey fans, myself included, that are very confused with the arbitrary nature of a lot of these rules being determined. And case in point, and most prominently at this point, is goaltender interference. Every night something happens, and I get the impression fans are walking away saying, can you take me through as a league how you came up with that? And I think the same thing applied last night. Can you take me through?
But see, the thing of it is,
how this happened.
But it's the opposite. Because when you have a question about goaltender interference, you can read the definition on goaltender interference, but at the end of the day, it's still a subjective evaluation by the referee. The referee sees the call in real time. It's a goal. It's no goal. It's a penalty. It's not a penalty. And then he gets to review it if there's a coach's challenge. Now he gets to review his work. He looks at it. It's still subjective. Even though he's looking at video, he's got his own view as to what constitutes interference inside or outside. So there's ambiguity built into the rules. There's no ambiguity built into the rules on the concussion stuff. The concussion stuff says very clearly, it's the exact opposite. It's so precise that they said we were following the rules.
Right.
And the rules say unless he was hit with a shoulder in the head, or unless he was punched in the face, or unless he smashed his head directly on the ice, if he's slow to get up or clutches at his head, for some reason other than those three, the concussion spotter says, I'm not allowed to do anything about it because I got my marching orders, and my marching orders say I'm not allowed to do that.
Bob McKenzie in studio. Pierre LeBrun reporting earlier that Kovalchuk's representative has told the Devils, and I guess essentially league-wide, he's coming back. He wants to be in the NHL, and what's going to have to happen here is a sign-and-trade, which we never really see in the NHL.
Yeah.
How is that going to affect how much he gets paid and how this deal actually, how much control he's going to have over it? Because like he's been out of the league for, what, a handful of years? He's 34 years old now. What are you really willing to pay him for a contract and, furthermore, pay the Devils to actually acquire him here? How difficult will this be?
I don't think it'll be that difficult. I think there'll be several teams line up to do it. The contract's not going to be an issue. Think of him as a free agent. Because technically, Ray Shiro, has the general manager in Jersey, has basically said, go away, do your shopping, find a team, do a contract with them, and to have that team come and see us. So that's what's going to happen. So they'll go to a team, and maybe it's the Florida Panthers, maybe it's the New York Rangers, maybe it's this team. And my guess is the deal in my mind will be a 2-year deal or a 3-year deal at somewhere between $6 and $7 million a year, probably closer to 7 than 6. He's been a real good player in the KHL. Looks like he's still got it. People are going to look at the Radulov thing and say, hey, he was great for Montreal this year.
By the way, please don't tell me Radulov's getting a 7-year contract.
I wouldn't think he'd get 7 years, but I think he'll get 5.
Oh my God. I'd give him 5. And he's younger. I told you that every day. He's younger.
He's a lot younger than Kovalchuk. Yeah. Anyways, back to Kovalchuk for a second. So you go out, you do a deal, and then you go back to, that team goes back to Jersey, and my guess is it's going to be a draft pick. Going to be a second round pick, or it's going to be a third round pick, right, or maybe it's a pick and a prospect, or whatever it is. New Jersey's not going to go nuts on this because they also know that he could wait a year and he's totally unrestricted to come back. Once he turns 35 a year from now, he's totally unrestricted in the National Hockey League. Doesn't need New Jersey's thing. But he can only, if he comes back in a year, no one's going to give him the 2 or the 3 year deal. Because now over 35 players, it's different. That goes on your cap forever.
Right.
Even if he quits again and goes off into the sunset and you're not paying him, he's still got a full cap hit. So it's optimum time for him to come back because he'll be able to probably get a 3-year deal from somebody. And it's an optimum time for the Devils. And so basically the Devils don't have to negotiate the deal. They just basically say, give us the terms and conditions that you want to sign from the team. They say it, sign it, trade them. Can't be done until after the expansion draft, after the draft. So it's not going to factor in for 2017 draft picks. Technically, you can't formally sign a contract until July 1. You can do all the work ahead of time, but you can't be using currency in the 2017 draft, the picks and what have you, because he hasn't changed hands yet.
I'm intrigued to see where that goes.
Yeah,
it's
going to
be a wild couple of months. There's no doubt about that. All right, Bob, we'll get you back in here in a couple of days.
Thanks, guys.
There's Bob McKenzie, our Hockey Insider. The Hockey Insider is brought to you by Finance and Monthly Payment Plans for Big Dreams and Everyday Budgets. We'll get to the 3 stars best bets next. All right, we'll get to the 3 stars here in a moment. Time now for our best bets brought to you by ProLine. I'm on the Rangers tonight. I think they're going to win tonight. On the Yankees, they don't lose. And over the number, Cleveland-Toronto, even though the Blue Jays essentially have the Cleveland Indians from the movie Major League, in terms of their lineup tonight.
Don't give me any of that, ole.
I think the number's going over. Over the number. So now 20 and you can score 79. You can find my picks on Twitter at TSN 1050 Radio and get way into the game with ProLine. It's the sports betting game that lets you turn small wagers into big excitement. ProLine, get way into the game. We're talking about Jim McElwain, the head coach of the Gators.
Yeah, this guy.
Who may or may not have been naked on top of a shark on a boat.
He was. It's him, for sure.
It sure looks a lot like him. And
how do you lie about it? Like, I don't understand, like... I also don't know if you admit it is you. Like,
I think you have to say it's not me.
We've all had moments, but getting naked and climbing on a shark, like that is...
that's awesome.
That's another level.
It's on a different level. It's on a very different level.
When you're in that position, he's got to...
That's the thing. You got
to answer some questions.
18-year-old kids coming into your program, and you're the naked guy on a shark.
Bobby, do you think that's a fireable offense?
I think that's probably a fireable offense.
Really?
Having said that, I don't even know, like, who's he coach?
The Florida Gators.
Florida Gators.
Football team.
Young
like,
people.
It's
see, but I think it could help you in recruiting.
You've become
certain
the cool
quality
guy.
Of student.
Yes.
Well, it's true. We're talking about the South here, too, the SEC. I mean, I don't know. I think it would come up in recruiting situations.
I think if you were at Harvard, I think you're in trouble.
Yeah. Well, you got two boys. I mean, if this guy walked into your living room and tried to recruit one of your kids, would you ask him, was it him in the pick? You'd have to.
And then what would your follow-up be?
I just
be?
Might
what?
Say legend.
Yeah. He doesn't say a word. You're like, we're in. We're coming down to Florida.
What's the guy's name again?
And can we go fishing next week?
Yeah.
Jim McElwain.
We're going to commit.
Name.
I know.
We'll
should
be in
taking
Florida
serious
next week.
With the,
and me and
I don't
buddies.
Know anything about the story. It just made me laugh.
Yeah, it's quite the pick. You got to see it. And then delete your search history.
That's what I would say. My son's committing, and next week me and my buddies are in Florida, and we would like to go fishing.
All right. Let's see if we can get this right today. We're out of here. Oh, we're my. Back tomorrow at 4
p.m. Okay, I take it back. I just saw the picture.
You're out?
Yeah, I'm out.
This is not happening.
I'm out.
We'll chat then.
We'll chat then.